The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
I think most people, when they hear pornography addiction, they think about it being a men's problem.
Yeah.
And so you don't often think about women struggling with the same addiction. How does the addiction to pornography differ in women as opposed to men? Is there a difference?
There is a difference.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, you know, you often think about, well, I guess, pornography, right, being a male issue. There's some new data out, and it's quite telling. It's not necessarily the case. We just talked about Alessandro Serinelli, and one of the things that shocked me about his story was not the heroic, just the heroic forgiveness and a lot of that, but what happened, how he started reading pornographic material. It actually was given to him by his dad, and it led to his attempted rape and eventual murder of St. Maria Goretti. They say that Ted Bundy, the serial killer, he says his addiction, all that started, began with pornography. So you see the roots of a lot of this. This happened back 1902 with Serinelli. Back in that time, I'm thinking, gosh, was there even porn then? Almost in my mind is so idyllic, you know? Obviously it wasn't, but then I fast forward a century or so, right? Look where we are today. I think things are getting a lot worse. For Alessandro, it was the reading of porn that got him going. Today, we've got visual porn everywhere. There's the internet, there's phones, there's tablets. I mean, you really can't escape it. I know certain people who have really struggled with it. They say, like, there's billboards, there's ads. It's like a drunk going into a bar, right? You got all this booze in front of you. For somebody who struggles in this area, it's hard to escape. But, you know, largely I always thought of it as a male problem. Up in, you know, and it has been, I would think, because men tend to be pretty visual. You know, back before phones and computers, there were all kinds of, you know, magazines and things like that. I think the e-revolution has changed a lot of what we're now seeing. You know, they say that right now it's so prevalent around, I think the number I saw was 2.5 million people visit the world's most popular porn site every minute. 2.5 million every minute. That's 28,000 users who are on porn sites every second. I know those numbers are hard to get your head around, right? Of those 2.5 million, you know, accessing a porn site in a minute, can you guess how many are women? Take a guess. What's your guess? You know, men tend to be visual porn sites. I would probably say 8 out of 10 are men, 9 out of 10 are men, maybe 15% are women. If you agree with me, you're wrong, right? Because I'm wrong. It's practically double that. 32%, 1 out of 3, around 800,000 are accessing porn every minute. 1.6 million in 2 minutes. So in other words, it's no longer just a male problem. It really isn't. For women who, who struggle with this, it can be very difficult. You know, it's rare. Matt Frad, Jason Everts. I know you know those names. Well known for their outreach to men on the issue. And they've got apps. And gentlemen, if you want to check out an app, check out Covenant Eyes. Helps keep men off of porn sites. I'm willing to bet, though, that you can't name one woman who's doing outreach. Can you? I mean, I know a number of men who've been out there. Well, I want to introduce you to one that you can now put on your list. Her name is Rachel Kalacki, and she's a young woman who's been through the porn ringer, I guess you could say. But through God's grace, she's come out on the other side, stronger, with greater love, greater understanding, not only for her own sexuality, but I think God is using her in a powerful way to help others. She wrote a new book called Love in Recovery, One Woman's Story of Breaking Free from Shame and Healing from Pornography Addiction. It's out by Ave Maria Press if you want to check it out. Just type in Love in Recovery, and I'm sure it'll pop up for you at Ave Maria. You can find them, AveMariaPress.com. But she also runs a ministry called Magdala Ministries, which you can find, and that website is MagdalaMinistries.org. And I didn't want to tell her story because I really want her to tell the story. It's an amazing one. But I often say God's grace is always at work. He always brings good out of every situation. And believe me, Rachel is not alone. Rachel, thank you for your time and thank you for your ministry. It's so good to talk with you today.
Oh, good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
So you wrote, you know, in your book about how, you know, unwanted sexual advances when you were quite young opened you up to the possibility of porn. Take us back in time. Tell us your story. How were you exposed? What cultivated you? And how unique is your story, or how common is it today?
Definitely not common, as you rightly pointed out in the intro. It's difficult to say because women have so many different avenues of exposure and avenues of being reached by porn. Yeah. It's common for women to be addicted, but the ways in which we fall to it are, I'd say, more diverse than men. I was a victim of some unwanted sexual experiences in my childhood that kind of created a template for my sexuality that was uncomfortable and shameful and awkward. And as a really wonderful Catholic counselor told me later in my life, that set me up for porn to pose itself as an answer to my discomfort or to trauma, basically. So I was exposed to porn when I was 13. It was written material on social media. And then that quickly devolved into a 5-year struggle with pornography. So I entered sobriety as a sophomore in college. It was a largely isolating battle. And
well, let me stop on the one, because I know when 50 Shades of Grey came out, I mean, it really got a lot of women going. I mean, it was a craze. It was pretty wild. How that book took off, how the movie took off. There was a series made as a result of it. I wonder how that influenced a lot of women. Was it literature that was the introduction into pornography? Was it visuals, or was it something progressive? And I think that's quite often how a lot of this starts, isn't it? It starts small, and one thing opens the door to another.
Yeah, I agree with you in most cases. I do think we have a bit of a false dichotomy of men are visual, women are emotional, I think men are more directly visual. And when it comes to pornography, that's pretty obvious. But with women, there was a study that I found super enlightening from two psychologists back in 2013. And they showed pornography to both men and women and had them kind of track, like, what did they attribute their arousal to? And men attributed it to attractiveness of people in the video. And women attributed it to their ability to imagine themselves as someone in the video. Wow. So they're consuming the same content. They are often even addicted to the same content, but what that content does for them is very different. Women have this intermediary of their imagination or their fantasy life that I think written material or audio material can come into play with. And men don't necessarily have that intermediary. So that's why we see men consuming more directly visual content, but women can be reached through a bunch of different pornographic avenues.
Yeah. It's interesting. But if I know what little I know of your story, and I want you to actually to share it. We'll take a few calls. If you want to join us too, the number's 888-914-9149. It wasn't necessarily visual porn that entrapped you, but it was more of written. It was a fan fiction story about your favorite band, right? Is that more common for women than you think?
I've been able to encounter hundreds of stories at this point. Written pornography is often a gateway, but it can be both. It kind of all depends on what you're exposed to first. Because again, that's part of that setting of your template. And it kind of provides a path for you, a really dark one. But mine was written. It quickly devolved into visual, though. It did not remain with just written content. But I do find a lot of women that is a gateway for them.
We were talking before you came on the air, Maggie and I, just about some of the content that is now being put in school libraries or being, kids are being subjected to in grade school, grades 1 through 8, or even before that, 1 through 4. And I just wonder, as a child is in a period of innocence, if they're exposed to something like that, do you think that has do you think that will malform them? How impactful, how concerned should parents be about the stuff that's now making its way into these early, grades of education for their kids?
Oh my gosh. I think we should be so concerned and raising the alarm every chance we get, because one of the most horrendous things about pornography is it is intrinsically fascinating. Sexuality is intrinsically fascinating to us. And that can be used for the good, that can be used to glorify God. But for children who have no maturity with which to process the information they're encountering, it's particularly dangerous. And sexual content makes you want more and more of it. It is like a drug in that way, but it also makes you want more and more extreme content. So there's a lot of evidence that that porn addicts, even starting at an early age, will just consume more and more hardcore content to achieve the necessary high. It is quite similar to a drug in that way. But I think parents should be incredibly concerned about the exposure of their kids, because it only takes one time to set them on a course that could take their whole life to get out of.
Yeah, I have received an email, I think it was today, or I was reading it either this morning or last night, from a listener. They asked me to keep their name anonymous, and I will, but it was a story, and I'll be vague with the story, of a very young child who mm-hmm. was on the playground and had pornography. I mean, really young, right? It was on the phone and was forcing some other girl to look at it. And some of the things that took place as a result of it were really, really horrible. It really concerns mm-hmm. me, because, you know, I think this is becoming such an epidemic. I mean, every year the numbers continue to go up, and the byproduct of it. I wonder, you know, what the result is in the long run. I saw an article the other day. Actually, somebody was making the case. They were saying that the porn addiction is actually fueling the spread of this woke ideology that we are seeing today. How rampant is it? Ultimately, what are the best safeguards against it? How did you find freedom and liberty from it?
Yeah, I do think it is rampant. I agree with you there. I saw some data the other day that said that 78% of Christian women between the ages of 18 and 35 consume pornography on a regular basis.
Wow. What's that number again? 78%?
78%. Yeah. Wow, and it kind of depends on like what your definition of regular is. They may mean once a month, they may mean once a week, but 90% of Christian men consume pornography on a regular basis.
9 out of 10. I often think about that. I don't want to interrupt you, but I want you to finish that thought, so don't lose it. But I remember a priest one time sharing with me how many, you know, they hear a lot of confession about men who have this, and it's, you understand that. But then when you look at those numbers, 9 out of 10 Christian men, you know, take a look at your church next time you're in there. That number holds true. 9 out of 10 men, you know, or, you know, 8 out of 10 women. I mean, it is a much bigger problem than most people think. But go ahead. I don't mean to step on you. I'm just trying to give a visual there to help people understand the gravity of this.
Yeah. And I think we like to think that it would never be our friends. It would never be our boyfriend. It would never be our spouse. It would never be our girlfriend. Like, this would never happen to us. But it is, as you're pointing out, like, a majority of people in the pew either have encountered this or are currently struggling with this. I think it's a massive epidemic, and I think it's affecting us gravely. I think we have young people with incredibly damaged visions of sexuality who mm-hmm. are not able to enter into loving and committed relationships. I think when we're looking at teenagers in particular struggling with this, men and women, I think we need to keep in mind, like, these are our future husbands, wives, fathers, mothers, priests, religious. So the prevalence of this issue, I think it should be a top priority. And that's part of why I have put my story out there and I run the organization that I do, is because I think, kind of agreeing with Fulton Sheen, that the level of a civilization could be written in the level of its women. And I think restoring women means we can restore a very broken culture.
Well, I want to commend you too, because, you know, it's so easy not to say anything about one's personal struggle, but when you bring it to light, you know, not only, you know, mm-hmm. does the light disinfect it, you know, but then it becomes part of your story, and you can use it in a way to really resonate and relate with a lot of other people and help them find the same freedom you did. You wrote in your book that what's known as purity culture mm-hmm. can actually contribute to women getting caught up in porn. I was struck by that. What's purity culture, and how do you think it entraps women in the porn use?
Yeah, so purity culture is, it could take on many definitions, but my experience of it is that it's a narrative that kind of white knuckles purity, or it holds purity as the highest possible standard of virtue. It kind of distorts the church's message of chastity into something about control. largely about like virginity or just being unscathed, or it can take on a lot of different language. But I've found that the purity culture narrative, it began in the evangelical church and then kind of trickled its way into Catholicism. But we were largely dealing with it in the early 2000s. But I think it absolutely entrapped women in shame, because a lot of the narrative was very permissive towards men when it came to sexual sin in general, including pornography. But a lot of the narrative for women was just about modesty and virginity. Yeah. So that, not that those messages are bad, they're not, but we have to couch it in a language of God's mercy, and also recognizing that women sin sexually too. And so I think it sent a lot of women into hiding, basically.
I love your story. I love your perspective. My guest today is Rachel Kalacki. If you want to join us too, you can dial in 888-914-9149. We're taking a look at actually women in pornography. It was quite striking how the numbers are changing here. And she wrote a book called Love and Recovery. You can check that out. One woman's story of breaking free from the shame and healing from pornography addiction. Maybe you're dealing with it. Maybe God's talking to you today. Maggie, before Rachel came on, you said you actually had some thoughts on this whole purity culture. Why don't you share that?
Well, I think a lot of times we're taught by rhetoric that says people just say things like don't have sex or don't watch pornography. They're telling you the don't, but they're not telling you why. So it doesn't make sense. I think if you're going to honor the dignity of someone, you want to educate them. You want to say, hey, you know what? If you watch pornography, if you masturbate, these are things that are going to forever inhibit your capacity for having authentic relationships. Do you want good, healthy relationships? Okay. You know, these are things you can kind of do to safeguard yourself. Like, people need practical application of this knowledge. Just telling someone don't do this doesn't actually give you a plan when you are faced with these things. When you say don't have sex, but you don't include the fact that, hey, if you wait, you build muscle and virtue, you build trust, you build security and confidence and faith and like all of these things. I think there's generations of people that aren't told that. And so you're just kind of left out to make mistakes and then feel shame.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on it, Rachel?
I definitely agree with you. I think the lack of education is a trauma in of itself sometimes. Yeah. I also just think that we have to give people acknowledgement, and rather than put the emphasis on the don't, like, put the emphasis on the do. Yeah. Like, do pursue virtue even when you fall. Do pursue mercy and reconciliation with the Lord. You know, I think so much of, I like that you're pointing out that it was just a lot of don't, and I think the chastity message needed to be way more do than don't. I think giving people acknowledgement that sin is going to happen, and it's about how do you respond to it. Do you use it as an encounter with your Savior, and then, you know, as he says in the Gospels, we try to go and sin no more, or do we fall to shame, or do we fall to apathy towards it? You know.
No kidding. And it can be desensitizing to you when you get trapped into it. As I said, if you want to join us, I have a few more minutes with my guest today, and I'll go to the phones in just a second. You can get in at 888-914-9149. But I do want to hit on something else you wrote about too. And you wrote that and if you're a woman, I'd love to hear your perspective on this. Feel free to dial in and maybe share your own struggle. You could be anonymous. You can maybe share how you found freedom. Or gentlemen, I'm sure many men are grappling with it. You write though that women need to understand what their sexuality is for and what its purpose is. Mm-hmm. Have people lost sight of that? I think the theology of the body, I think John Paul II's work is so critical for our time. I think it should be taught in earnest. But the proper understanding of human sexuality in general, and women in particular, I'm a man, so, you know, what your perspective on this, you know, you say that women need to understand what their sexuality is for and the purpose of it. Expand on that if you could. I'd love to get your perspective.
Yeah, I lean a lot on Edith Stein when I think about, or St. Teresa Benedict of the Cross. I lean a lot on her philosophy of woman when I just think about woman's purpose in body and in soul. And she places so much emphasis on the life-giving principle of female sexuality, and female spirituality, quite honestly. So every single woman, whether or not she becomes a biological mother, has the capability of motherhood within her. That's a power given to each one of us. And it's not about if we become a mother, it's how are we going to be mothers. And again, some of us get to be mothers to our own children, but some of us mother our coworkers by being nurturing and loving and gentle and bold on their behalf. Some of us mother siblings or friends. I think spiritual and physical motherhood is the best expression of female sexuality because it gives life. It's creative. So I think pornography and sexual sin is the complete deprivation of that creativity and that life-givingness because it's very self-centered and we're designed to be selfless in the best of ways to give life to other people.
Well, let's do this. So grab a few calls. Patricia is listening in San Diego, California. Hi, Patricia. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. I just wanted to say that sometimes there is no help for young couples that are having sexual problems. And they don't know where to turn in the church. There's no one they really feel comfortable to talk, and they try to figure out how to resolve this. And a lot of times it's pornography that they turn to, that maybe let's try this, let's look at that. You know, there's really no instruction. They married as, and it wasn't working. It's not what they thought it was going to be. So what do they do?
Okay. It's a good call, Patricia. Thank you very much. And Rachel's talked about it. She says sometimes young married couples, you know, they search for porn when they have unfulfilled sex lives. There's a lot of couples that do that. They think, well, we're married, and they want to spice up their relationship. How do you address that within the marital bond?
Yeah. I think there was a couple books that my husband and I were given or recommended early on in our marriage by our priest. And one of them was Holy Sex by Dr. Greg Popcak. Mm-hmm. I actually haven't read the whole thing, but I know I've had several friends who are helped with this particular issue by that book. So I'd recommend it. I think there are church resources, but I also think there's an increasing amount of Christian and Catholic counselors who are working on this and working in this issue and ready to have candid conversations in a counseling setting. Yep. So I would highly encourage young couples to seek that out as a resource.
Well said. Sheila is listening to us in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Hi, Sheila. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Drew. First time caller.
I'm so glad.
So this is a great subject because I have been alone. I'm divorced. I had four children. Raised them as a single mom, worked full time, did everything I could possibly do. And I have quit dating basically in the last 8 years. Oh. I've been alone for 16.
Oh, sorry.
Basically because this problem, every guy that you find on even a Christian website, they all want sex. It's all about sex. How many, you know,
right.
I don't even know what to say. They want to watch porn with you. They want you to have multiple partners with them. It's, I don't know. It's obscene to me and it absolutely disgusts me. And for a long time, I kind of gave into it a little bit because I'm like, okay, how am I going to find somebody to love me? But I just gave up. I'm like, I'm done with this. I'm much better off by myself. Doing what I need to do every day. My 35-year-old daughter cannot find anybody either. She wanted to have a family. She's never going to be able to have a family because of this issue. It's very frustrating. Mm. There's a lot of good women out there that, you know, deserve to be loved and cherished as we, you know, should be.
Amen to that.
Sheila, and I'm sorry, I'm a little teary because it is very frustrating.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear what you're going through. I really am. I know there are some good men out there who would love to find a woman like you. Not every man gives into that particular temptation, but your story is 100% accurate.
9 out of 10 is rough.
Believe me, I know. I've heard from people who use Catholic
really
dating
rough.
Apps. And they talk about how, you know, these guys are not so Catholic on that app. You know what I mean? It's like,
absolutely not.
It's really difficult. Hey, Rachel, let me bring you into the conversation here. Your advice for Sheila.
Yeah. Well, first of all, just God bless you. Thank you for sharing your heartache. I can only imagine. Yeah. The suffering that you've been through and the suffering that is probably being like doubled right now because you feel so alone in it. So just thank you for sharing. First, I would love to encourage you to join.
I'm sad for my daughter. I'm sad for her.
Yeah, of course. Of course. And I think so many parents are suffering from exactly what you're talking about. So I'm grateful you're shedding light on it. Yeah, I would encourage you to join our community in Magdala. We have women of all ages who are healing from exposure to pornography or addiction, or whether they were personally addicted or they consumed it in relationships, like what you're pointing out. Yep. We would love to have you come alongside us, and but also just know that I'm keeping you and your daughter particularly in my prayers as you endure this. You are pointing out a very, very intense suffering.
Sheila, I'm heading up to the Shrine of Our Lady of Champion this weekend. I will pray for you. All right, I will pray for you, and then
thank you.
I'll ask Saint Joseph to intercede for you as well. Okay, and for your daughter especially. You know, I've got sons and daughters that are single. Mm-hmm. I hope they find virtuous men and virtuous women. And it's tough out there. Sheila, I'm so grateful for your call. I hope to hear from you again. I'm going to take just a short pause. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. There's a lot to get into. Also, a little bit later, Dr. Kloponis will be stopping by, and we'll take a look at another aspect of this. But our conversation will continue right after this. Stay with me. Hey, looking for a new job? How about one that offers opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, thanks for joining me. If you're just tuning in, taking a look at a unique angle to something that is really societal. And it's just not just the epidemic of pornography. We know all about it. We know how it hurts not only the individuals, but society at large, and how rampant it is amongst men. Today, we're taking a look at women and pornography. And, you know, the numbers are stunning. You know, some cases, 9 out of 10 Christian men are dealing with this, something like 78% or 8 out of 10 women. Pornography changes the way that one views the other person in both sexual and non-sexual scenarios. And it can make them more inclined to, you know, see sexual advances or openness to such advances where there are none, or, you know, where perpetrators of sexual misbehavior are also responsible for their actions. I mean, a lot goes on here. The researcher in porn only affirms that, you know, victims are not responsible for leading on their predators. A lot of people think that is. Changes the brain. A lot of data continues to surface. There are spiritual ways to combat this. I'll get to them in a minute. But first, I want to welcome back my guest today, Rachel Kalacki. She wrote a great book, and I do want to recommend it to you. It's called Love and Recovery, One Woman's Story of Breaking Free from Shame and Healing from Pornography and Addiction. It's available at Ave Maria Press. And Rachel, let's go right to the phones. We only have a few minutes. I'm going to get a number of calls in here for you. Connie is in Robinsonville, New Jersey. Connie, good afternoon.
I prefer it's from anywhere New Jersey.
Anywhere New Jersey, then.
Hi, I'm fine.
Good to have you.
Good to talk to you, too. I can wholeheartedly attest to the shame that comes with pornography and viewing of it. And it started for me when I was in second grade. Wow. And I came across my uncle's Playboy magazines. Just seeing the images, and it became addictive from that special feeling I felt.
Yeah.
And then it went on to reading and trying to find anything that had anything pornographic involved in it, in literature. And then the internet came out and years passed. And so I can attest to what you're talking about.
Wow.
I see it change the trajectory of my life because of how I viewed sex and didn't cherish it as that ultimate gift from a husband to a wife.
Wow. What a beautiful call. Connie, thank you for calling and sharing.
You're welcome.
I'm going to let Rachel respond to you as well. I mean, introduced by, I'm assuming by accident, to your uncle's porn. I think it's a case for a lot of people. You know, I had a friend who was afraid his son was effeminate and actually would leave Playboy magazines out for his son to find, thinking that that would maybe send him on a different trajectory. He thought that maybe his son was going to be gay, so he thought that would cure him, I guess. I don't know. But I think, man, the damage that comes from that type of behavior is pretty profound. And Rachel, your thoughts for Connie and her own experience and how, you know, she testified to the fact that it did change her trajectory as well.
Yeah, Connie, thank you for sharing. And I can hear the pain in your voice, and I relate to it so heavily. And one of the parts of my book and parts of my story that I love is when I finally told my theology of the body professor about my history with pornography when I was in recovery. And I told him, like, I'm afraid lust has totally changed my life. I'm afraid I can't be married or I can't really love anyone because of this. And his response to me was, he said, lust did not attack you because you cannot love. Lust attacked you because your love is meant to change the world.
Wow.
So I just want to pass that on to you, Connie, that yeah, like this, this was not an accident. The enemy sees a gift that you have and he's tried to take it away from you. And so I just want to encourage you to, like, keep being honest, keep receiving the Lord's forgiveness, keep forgiving yourself. And and I know he's not going to be victorious in the end. So thank you for sharing so much.
Thank you so much, Connie.
Amen.
What a beautiful testimony that is, Rachel. I love what he said. That was a Holy Spirit moment. Maggie, I understand we just got a tweet in as well. Do you want to share that or do you want me to share that? Why don't you share the tweet that just came in?
Yeah, Sue Ellen wrote to us and she said, thank you for discussing women and pornography. She says, this is something that I have struggled with my entire life after being exposed as a young child. Porn did warp me. I'm still healing from this in my 40s. I'm relieved to know that I'm not the only Christian woman who struggles with this. Sue Ellen, we're praying for you.
It's interesting, isn't it, Rachel? I mean, a lot of women, they think they're in a minority, perhaps, or an anomaly, but they're really not. I mean, most men know that, you know, men are dealing with that particular issue or have dealt with that issue. But for women, does it take a different, approach or perspective? Are women perhaps more ashamed than men? Is there greater shame for a woman to say that she's dealt with this?
I think so. And not because men don't experience great levels of shame, but I think the added layer of isolation and lack of acknowledgement, especially on the part of the church from women or for women, definitely creates a higher level of shame. So that's part of why I'm doing the work I do. And shame is the biggest barrier to healing. It keeps you in an addictive cycle. So as long as you stay in shame, this will continue to affect your life. So I think women heal in community with each other and in accountability with each other. And so that's why Magdala is trying to put them in community with each other in order to heal.
And again, let's talk about that very quickly, and I'll grab a few more calls. Joseph, everyone else will get your calls. MagdalaMinistries.org. If there's a woman listening right now, what will that do for them? What are they going to find there? How do they get plugged in?
Yeah, so we were founded in 2021. We run virtual groups for women ages 18 and up. You journey through our curriculum, which is 17 sessions long. So you journey with one group of women for a span of about 10 months, led by a trained small group moderator to kind of explore your history and pursue psychological and spiritual healing from these things. There's also on-campus groups if you're interested in helping a group get started at a college campus. And we're also launching parish groups in the fall of 2023. So if you're interested in having Magdala at your parish, you can inquire about it on our website as well.
Well said. Okay, let me grab another call or two. We'll go to Joseph, who's listening to us in Castro Valley, California. Hi, Joseph.
Oh, hey, Drew. Hey, Rachel. Yeah, I got to tell you, I heard a call and I had to get in right away. My daughter's in the same boat, in a sense of not being able to find a boyfriend because of the pressure and wanting to have sex. It's a terrible thing. And I think what you're doing is great. And I hope somehow that reaches out to men. You know, we got to pray but most importantly, persevere for anyone, male or female, to trust God to lead them to the right person. Because God's got the solution, but this is a chronic problem. And I'm glad that caller called in, because I just have to attest to what she's saying. It is a real problem. And it's a fact of life right now.
Joseph, pray to your namesake, St. Joseph, for that 20-year-old daughter of yours who's having trouble finding a boyfriend. It really is true. Maggie was saying to me, Rachel, too, that the dating world is just rife with pornography, right? I mean, it's a very different culture. It's really difficult. So what if you do find somebody you like who happens to struggle with pornography? Do most women say, hey, I want nothing to do with it? Or can you somehow help that person find the freedom that you found? Because if it's that difficult, you know, it's really thin ice here, because you don't want to get into a relationship with somebody who's, you know, who may carry that into a long-term relationship and it may manifest later. But at the same time, if this is so prolific, how do you deal with it?
Yeah, healing from an addiction is not linear. It's a little bit up and down. Relapse is typically part of the journey, no matter what you're addicted to. I think when you're encountering a significant other who has struggled with pornography, there's a massive difference between somebody who is making every effort to enter a stable and healthy recovery and somebody who is apathetic and not resisting at all. I think if you are in a relationship with somebody or want to be in a relationship with somebody who is on an upward trajectory, and again, that's not always linear, but who is, you know, doing everything in their power to heal and to recover, I think that's a person who's pursuing sanctity and virtue, and I think that's beautiful. I think it's the people who are apathetic towards this that perhaps are not a good choice for a relationship right now. Yeah, but there are plenty of people who are actively resisting and doing their best to pursue virtue. Yeah, look for those people.
And I agree. I mean, we had the other caller, the woman who's stopped dating for 16 years. She's worried about her daughter as well. You know, pray for a good spouse. You know, my producer here, Maggie, you are 33 now, 34. You know, I'm sharing your age, right, Mag? You prayed for a long time. You were in other relationships and you found your husband. And what advice would you give to these women out there who are saying, I need to find a good man, but it's tough because you're in love with Joe.
Yeah, but I didn't think I would actually find it. I didn't think I would find him. But I, at some point, I just had to keep bringing it to the Lord, honestly, going to adoration as often as I could. Anytime I felt that ache or that burden of not knowing what my future was going to be, or was this going to be my lot forever? Anytime you have those questions or that ache, go to adoration, and it's going to change your perspective. You're going to walk out breathing easier and feeling better. And eventually God will do what he's going to do. And then you're going to be so joyful about it.
You meant that. I love that, Maggie. Rachel, I have a moment left. I just want to hit on one other point. Dr. Peter Kaplonis is going to be stopping by as well. You said something else I think is really important for people to hear in your book. And I hope people will pick up your book and read it. I think your perspective is awesome. You said that addiction doesn't necessarily mean frequency. And a lot of people think, oh, I'm addicted. I'm hitting the computer every day, or I'm reading these books every day. You say doesn't mean necessarily mean frequency, that you can be addicted even if you don't do it very often. So what's your working definition of addiction, and maybe some, well, let's deal with that first.
Yeah. I lean a lot on, Gerald May. He was a Christian psychiatrist, for kind of my framework of what addiction is. And he says that, addiction is an attachment that limits the freedom of human desire. So he basically frames anything, Yeah, that means your desires cannot act virtuously in freedom.
Yep.
He frames that as an addiction. That can be food, that can be sugar, that can be caffeine, yeah. that can be pornography, can be all sorts of different things with right. varying levels of gravity.
Right, okay.
But yeah, I think if you are, if you're experiencing a trigger, so if you're triggered and desiring pornography and you cannot resist, no matter the frequency, that's telling. That attachment is limiting your desire to be virtuous. Yeah.
Well, Rachel, I want to thank you for your time, for your efforts. And I want to plug your website too. And for any woman who's struggling with pornography, we took a very unique look at it today. It's MagdalaMinistries.org. The book is called Love and Recovery: One Woman's Story of Breaking Free from Shame and Healing from Pornography Addiction, available from Ave Maria Press, just out. And you can find them at AveMariaPress.com. We'll have to have you back again. Let me give you final thoughts here for those who are listening or anything you want to impart to them.
Yeah, I think just emphasize mercy in your own life and in the lives of other people. As the numbers are telling, this is something we are facing together as men and women, and as a church. This is rampant in our pews. Yeah. So please extend the hand of mercy and compassion when it comes to this issue. I think the more we talk about it, just from the perspective of shame or from a perspective of, just harm or evil, we ostracize more and more the people who are struggling. So extend that hand of mercy to yourself and to those around you.
You got it. Hey, Rachel, thank you. Keep up your good work. I hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. God bless.
God bless you. That's Rachel Kalaki. Say a prayer for her and her ministry. Now, I think as we talk about this issue, and Dr. Peter Kalponis is going to be stopping by, what St. Augustine once said, he said that lust indulged became a habit, and a habit unresisted became a necessity. Pray for that freedom. We'll talk more when I return. Hey, if you're in the market for health insurance, well, our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is here to help you and your family find the most cost-effective health plan. Learn more at relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Your life connected.
Yeah, well, it's great to be here with you today. Hey, if you missed any part of this conversation, or maybe you think your daughter or your son or somebody else should listen to it, our podcasts are available anywhere podcasts are heard, but great way to go is relevantradio.com. Maggie will have this show up, maybe in about an hour after we sign off. Give her a little time to do that. And I think it's well worth listening to. You heard the story of Rachel Kalaki, and Dr. Peter Kalponis, he joins me now. He's a very gifted psychologist and the founder of a great organization. You can check this out, Integrity Counseling Services in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, and their URL, their web domain. Find them online at integritycounselingpa.com. But he deals with marriage and family and therapy and men's issue and pornography addiction and recovery and a whole litany of other things. And it's always good to tap into his genius. Doctor, thank you for being with me. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I mean, we just heard, I know you joined us a little bit later. We were talking with Rachel Kalaki, who struggled with pornography as a woman, and she did find freedom and is now trying to help other women as well. I'd love to get your take on this. You know, she says, we used to think men used to be a visual thing for men, but it's not necessarily just that. What are the differences of dealing with women who are entrapped by porn versus men? I'm sure you deal with both. She's saying there's a rise in women now affected by this, almost 1 out of 3. Was one of the numbers she threw out. I'd love to get your take on that. How problematic is this? Are the numbers continuing to rise? And, what are some of the things you're saying?
It is a growing problem for women. You know, this is, it used to be thought that it was just a men's issue. It's both a men's and a women's issue now. And what I find that the challenge for women is in seeking help, because they struggle with so much more shame than men do. You know, when a man comes out and says he's struggling with pornography addiction, people say, well, that's terrible. Yeah, but we know men are pigs and this is what happens. But for a woman, when she, you know, confesses that she's struggling with pornography addiction, what do? We label her.
Yep.
and we give her terrible labels, and just the shame is so great for women. So, you know, I give a lot of credit to your guest, you know, because, you know, she was able to, you know, reach above beyond the shame to get the help she needed, and now she wants to help other women, which is awesome. Yeah.
It's interesting you say that. I knew a young man who was exposed to pornography very young. He saw some of his uncle's pornography, and it addicted him, and he ended up having eating, you know, disorders. He ate way too much, and eventually, when he came out with it, it was destroying his life and his relationship. He went to the fiance of the girl that he was married to and told the father, he goes, I have to be honest with you. You know, I'm going to marry your daughter, but I'm struggling with pornography. And the father said, it's just porn. Don't worry about it. He played it down. It was nothing. I mean, the father said, everybody looks at it. I mean, that was kind of the attitude. And this man was very vulnerable coming out, recognizing he's getting therapy and help for it. And I think that's heroic that he does it. But the attitudes towards porn in our culture today are really, they're very different. It has become very mainstream. And people don't see it as being very dangerous. Physiologically, it changes the brain, doesn't it? And there are other things that it does to the person. What are the impacts of porn exposure to the body, to the mind, and just in general societally?
Well, you know, what it does is it really hardens a person to, you know, understanding how it affects them and helps other people. It changes the way a person views sexuality. It changes the way a person views the opposite sex, you know, and it turns other people simply into, for lack of a better term, sex toys. Mm-hmm. To be used for one's own personal pleasure.
Yeah.
You know, so you forget that the other person is a person.
Right.
And they just become someone that can meet your sexual needs. And you know, it really leads people to using one another. You know, my former partner, you know, I work with for 20 years, Dr. Richard Fitzgibbon.
I know him well.
Talked about the sexual utilitarian philosophy. And that's simply the idea that it's okay to use other people for your own sexual pleasure. And, of course, God did not create his children to be used.
Yeah.
All right. But it leads us to use one another and to allow ourselves to be used. And that's also a terrible thing.
How important is John Paul II's seminal work, The Theology of the Body? I mean, that's so critical today, isn't it?
Oh, it is critical because it talks about, you know, what is God's plan for human sexuality? And he asks basic question, you know, why did God create two sexes? And what is the purpose of sexuality, and how is it to be used, and how is it to be enjoyed? All right, but it has to be done, you know, within the context of a healthy marriage where it's all about giving, not about using. So this is so important in our culture today.
You know, Dr., I'm curious. We spoke to Rachel, and quite often you talk about pornography, you think of men, right? Why is it today that more women are getting into porn? I always thought it was a visual thing. She says, well, it's not quite that anymore. What is it that attracts women to this?
Well, I think there are many things. You know, first of all, there's sort of this, you know, equality thing. If the men can do it, why shouldn't the women?
Yeah.
So there's this push for equality that we should be able to do this, you know, but what it's saying is that, you know, instead of saying, you know, pornography is a terrible thing for both sexes, well, yeah, it must be okay for both sexes,
right,
if one of them is using it.
Right.
So that's it there. You know, and also for many women, you know, and here's where we see the differences between men and women. For men, it's all about the pictures and the visual stimulation.
Mm-hmm.
For women, it's often, you know, the promise of a relationship. It's the eroticized promise of a relationship that draws them into it. So for women, it's not just the visual pictures, but it's also things like the racy romance novels,
yeah,
that are very, very pornographic that lead them into it. So, you know, here's where we do see a difference between a man and a woman's brain.
Yeah. You know, it's really tragic. I had a couple callers before you joined us. One woman, you know, raised four kids by herself. She says, I stopped dating after 8 years.
God bless her.
She's been single for 16 now. She said she'd go out on some of these things. The guys want her to look at porn or they want to have sex. And she just wants to be loved. What are you seeing in your practice? A lot of marriages falling apart over this? Or a lot of women, men trying to find lasting relationships? And this is the poison that isn't really intoxicated that relationship?
This definitely does tear apart relationships. It tears apart marriages because, again, you know, it leads people just to use one another for their own sexual pleasure. There is no more relationship. There is no more intimacy. It's all about using one another. And many women are fed up with this. You know, They would rather go through their lives single than have to deal with a man that wants to not only use them, but all the millions of women on the internet. All right.
Yeah.
No woman wants to share her husband with all the women on the internet.
That's so true. That is really true. So what advice do you give, Doctor? We have a couple moments left to help somebody both who is struggling, man or female. I know a lot of couples use pornography. We had that call come up in another call as well.
Yeah.
How do you protect your relationship? How do you protect your purity? I mean, purity is one of those great virtues that we need in order to attain holiness in our walk with the Lord. And I think it's one of the great spiritual attacks of our day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, my advice is don't buy into what the culture is telling you. The culture is telling you that pornography is okay. In fact, there are some people, unfortunately, in my own field, the mental health field, that would recommend that couples view pornography to, you know, quote, spice up their sex lives.
Yep.
I said, don't believe that. Don't believe what the culture is telling you. You know, learn from what the church has so much wisdom on this through Pope John Paul II's Theology of the Body. And there was another series of talks he gave about relationships called Love and Responsibility. Right, get into those documents, read them, find out what the church is saying, and this is where you're going to find a healthy sex life and a healthy relationship.
Yeah. Well, Doctor, I am grateful. People want to get a hold of you. I only have about a moment left. What's the best way to track you down?
It's my website, integritycounselingpa.com.
Thank you for making time for us and how busy you are. My gratitude.
Thank you.
Look forward to talking to you again soon. I am out of time for the day. It's always great to be with you. If you missed any part of this conversation, hit our podcast, okay? We had a great lineup today. I'll be back again tomorrow with another one. Until then, I promise you my prayers. Please say a prayer for me. And God bless you.